Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021. Today, ratio analysis. Now, this topic will spill over into Monday's lecture, but I'm going to start. I'll pull up the usual numbers here for a brief minute. But to begin, let me start this out with some important stuff. Okay, sir, 2,116.58. Ma'am, 0.0240. Sir, 5,288,000. Okay, now, the first question in your mind is, what the hell are you talking about, boy? Well, that's exactly right. I can give you numbers all day. I have so many numbers. I have almost an innumerable amount of numbers. But they don't mean anything without context. You see, numbers are nothing if you don't know what they are about or what the relative comparison of them to other numbers is. Even if you know what the number means, what does it mean in context of your analysis, your analytics? And I can teach you ratio analysis all day long. Calculate, calculate, calculate until you're blue in the face. But it actually doesn't mean a damn thing to you unless you have some comparison basis for it. So when I do ratio analysis, I'm going to teach you ratios, okay? So I'm going to talk through them on Monday, how to calculate all these different ratios. But then, right, today I'm going to show you where you can get every one of those ratios right there for you in Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage. Every ratio that you could ever want, dozens and dozens of ratios, more than I could ever teach you in a class, they're right there. I mean, the point that I am making here is that after you know how ratios are calculated, which is absolutely important, the next thing is knowing how to interpret them, not calculating and calculating. If you want to do numbers, that's accounting. We do the analytics. We break those numbers down and say, what do they mean? What do they tell us? And in many cases, and I'll try to emphasize this today some, but a lot more on Monday, in many cases, there is not a perfect number. Well, this ratio is 5.6. Is that right? Is that a good number? Well, in some cases, interestingly enough, it's hard to tell. You see, today I've been doing this all along with the stock markets. If you look at the numbers here on the screen right now, bear with me here. I'm going to try to do I thought I'd done a screen share, and apparently I did not do a good screen share. Really, I wanted to get the numbers here, but if you can't see the numbers live stream, it's finance.yahoo.com. Okay, now, let's go through this. Was this, sir, bull day or bear day on the market? Bear day. Significant or not significant? Not significant. Excellent. You see, I see red. That means bad, bad, bad. Well, not necessarily. That might not be, in this case, the only one that's a little bit rattling there. The NASDAQ did shave off But I mean, that's a NASDAQ. That's like saying the Tasmanian devil had a spinny day. Yes, of course it does. If the markets are down, the NASDAQ's going to take that as a cue to go really down. So the relative context, yes, that's a red, that's a negative, that's a down day. But is that really the end of the world? Is that the zombie apocalypse coming right now? No, it's not. And this is the thing with ratio analysis or a lot of the numbers that we get in business. Should I be concerned about this number? Sometimes actually an up day or a very positive number in business is not the best thing. And I'm going to tell you some stories about that with ratios. But moving over here and looking a little bit more, come on. I want this to get out of my way here. Yes, I see myself, and I'm very handsome. Oh, I see. I didn't see that right. I didn't see that right away. Huh. Okay, well, that helps a lot because I think it gets in the way. Thank you for that. Although it kind of is weird that I thought I was showing the screen, but I'm not. Anyway, enough of that. Crude oil. There we go. It's a positive number. Well, that's sort of it's trying to find 75 a barrel. It's not finding it, but it did come up some today. That's 1.5% increase. So, yeah, it's trying to find its way up there to that one level, but there are still a lot of factors keeping it from making that break up to 75. Notice that gold and silver are down. Okay, so the next thing that we say is, okay, equities are down. So in other words, investors were selling stock. Well, obviously, they weren't buying gold and silver, so they weren't having a fit about that. So where was the money going? They sold stocks, they sold gold and all that. Oh, here they go. Bond prices are up. And you're saying, now, wait a minute, I see red. Remember, those are showing yields, which are the inverse of price. So if the yields are going down, that means bond prices are going up. So we had investors adjusting portfolios away from equities. Clearly, metals weren't where they were going. Oh, yeah, they were going to bonds. This isn't certainly a flight to quality. This is too minor for that. Again, it's all about relative movement. And I see in this case that the yield shaved 3.6 basis points. Okay, so that's nothing big at all. So, yeah, though. The equities, investors were getting out of equities. They were selling stocks. See the negatives? They were getting out of them. Nothing absolutely, there was no panic or anything. It was just mostly portfolio movement. And that we also see that gold and silver weren't the beneficiaries of that freed up capital. So it must, crude, that's its own market. But clearly what happened was there was some buying of bonds. Nothing huge. This was not a dramatic day. And this is one of those interesting days where I talked to two different traders today, and neither of them really had anything significant to say. I said, well, any direction? Not really. You know, the markets are a little bit jittery right now. We have some long-term real problems. Yes, we do have a conflict building that will probably blow up next year, a couple of them. One, in the Middle East, something really, really bad. And then also Taiwan, China will probably blow up next year. Is that affecting prices of securities right now? Not really, but it kind of adds to an overall, a little bit of a malaise about things. And another thing that is really kind of bothering the markets right now is what's next as far as government action goes. We've got a good, strong infrastructure bill that might be passed. We've got money in people's pockets. That whole nine yards, so is there any more good news that can come out of the government, or is it only bad news when the Fed finally says we got to tighten the money supply? Jitters. Nothing big, nothing ominous. It's sort of like me. I'm not really worried, but when I walk by a big pane glass window, I see the angel of death following me. I know he's back there. He pretends he's not. As soon as I turn around, he looks like he's shopping. But he's back there. So, yeah, we've got a few jitters. Now, if you look over here, the Financial Times did take London took a hit. The European bourses also seem to have been taking some hits, too. But on the other side of the world, the Nikkei was up, and that was a good, strong day. Look at that. See how the bulls were in charge, and then the bears came in, but then the bulls just came right back and fought their way through. So the United States, the Western world, United States, Europe, Great Britain, they were having a little bit of a pissy, bitchy day. On the other side, the Asian markets, well, they were seemed to be having a good day. So it's one of those days, nothing spectacular. Do want to bring something up interesting here. Now, I'm going to go back here. This is the S&P 500, the actual index of all 500 stocks added up and each one in the portfolio weighted by its market cap in the portfolio. So in other words, a $50 billion company would have twice as much weight in the portfolio as a $25 billion market cap company. That's how the Standard & Poor's portfolio, it's a weighted index average portfolio, the way you should do your own portfolio if you're doing it right. But anyway, let's look at what it shows us. Now, there's nothing really major going on here, but OBV. See if you know what the term means now. OBV. What do you see on OBV today versus average? Was this a heavy trading day or not? Look at the volume. What is the volume number there? 1.7, 1.8 billion shares. What is the typical days on balance volume over the last year? 3.2 billion. So would you say, ma'am, that this is a light trading day or a heavy trading day? Very light, yes. I mean, that's about half of a typical day. So what we're seeing here, interestingly enough, is, again, there was really not any excitement in the market. This was just a market just kind of parked. Portfolio adjustment, a lot of just tweaking portfolios, and maybe the amateurs playing their games. God knows I was in there trading just so I could give some money back to the world. But... yeah, that was not a spectacular day at all. This is almost, again, there was an old kind of a joke that was done in movies and cartoons in a war situation when someone at night says it's quiet, too quiet. Well, that actually is true. When a market gets, when you got out there in the field, it's too quiet from what it should be. That kind of gives you a little bit of a jitter. The market was really not interested in taking a position today at all. We'll see how the rest of the days work. Now, the next thing I'm going to do here is we'll bring up a stock, and then I'll bring it up again later. Anyone got a stock that you want to try to look at? We're going to do a ratio analysis on a company. But I won't do the numbers today. That's the point, is doing the numbers and then trying to explain why the numbers are just sort of like the background for the analysis. This is the wrong way to do it as far as I'm concerned. But anyone got a stock? Someone's, what was the ones, the last class? BB, what was it? BBIG. Someone said BBIG. I'd never heard of it, so I looked at it. Oh, you can kiss my ass. Excuse me for my French. You see what that? Do you see what's wrong there? Why I wouldn't want to really do that is the analysis of the first company. What's wrong with that company? It's probably not a good idea. Yeah, it's losing money. I mean, that company's losing $12, $12.50 per share. Now, that's not a that's a company that's right there, right off the bat. That company's in trouble. Its beta is very low, though. Well, that's weird. Why would its beta be low if it's losing money? Beta says this is a very safe stock. Darn right it is. It's safe to assume you're going to lose money in this stock. It sounds funny, but that's exactly what's going on here. What was the other one? Someone brought up another one. American Airlines. Oh, there we go. There we go. There's a great stock to start with. A beta of 1.78. The company is losing. I mean, this company's airplanes are flying through the air, pouring blood out the back. Jeez, Zoe. It's losing almost $10 per share. Here's something. Okay. Imagine, I got to be careful about how I frame this one. Imagine, sir, if I am your anatomy professor, okay? And I'm giving you the idea of what a human looks like. Do you think it would probably not be a good idea to get a 3'8" gorilla, you know, a midget gorilla, and say, this is a person? It wouldn't be a good idea. Neither would it be a good idea to take someone like some athlete, some high-powered athlete, like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the day. Here's an example of a person. No, that's not a good example of a person. You know, for one thing, it's nothing but a bunch of balloons walking around talking with a German accent. Hasta la vista, baby. You understand that you want to start with something that looks like a normal person. For a human anatomy class, I want to start with something that looks like a normal company for a corporate finance and analytics lecture. So we don't want to hit these kinds of companies like this. So you say, well, pull a company right off the top of your head that you know is, you're pretty sure, when before you even pull it up, that it's going to be a winner. It's going to be a very healthy company. So you know what I do when I get to this lecture? I just go with a war company. It sounds evil, and yes, I feel terrible about saying this. Actually, no, I don't. War is a business, and war is a good business, and there's always customers for war. As evil as that might sound, well, you don't have to invest in it. You can invest in you might invest in ivermectin or maybe something like that. I see that now the trend is to start drinking Roundup, glyphosate. Jeez, okay. Anyway. Lockheed Martin, it's a war company. War is profitable. It always is going to, I could have looked up other companies, you know, Boeing, Grumman, things like that. Companies that are involved in projecting our power across the planet and into near space and even farther into interplanetary space over the span of your lifetimes. So here we go. Look at this. Isn't this interesting? Lockheed Martin. A 97, almost a $100 billion market cap, it's got a 0.97 beta, which means that it is very close to being the volatility of the world portfolio. Lockheed Martin is, in a very disturbing way, a mirror image of the world in terms of price volatility, return volatility. Now, let me plow a little bit on you here, beat up some people just to keep this a little livelier. Oh, the pain is back. Okay, ma'am, does the P/E ratio confirm or dispute the beta as far as safety of the security is concerned? Yahtzee, very good. You guys are getting good. I'm impressed. In matter of fact, the P/E ratio is actually saying it's safer than the beta is saying. You see that? I mean, that P/E ratio is pretty low. To a certain extent, if I were into that kind of technical work, by the way, technical people who trade purely on technicals, numbers, they're called elves. If I were an elf, I would say that's almost a buy signal on that 13. In other words, that price could go up just because that PE ratio seems to be awfully low compared to the beta and compared to the profitability. I mean, that company is hella profitable. Look at that. $25.50 per share is what that company is making. Now, if you remember, we just looked at a company that had $12 negative per share, not $10 negative per share. Well, here's a really good rule for companies is positive is better than negative in this case. I mean, there's almost no question about it. Although, weirdly enough, and God, I hate to get confusing, but actually sometimes a negative profit is a good sign if it is a really seriously bad situation. Do you know why? Can you imagine why would a negative profit, earnings per share, actually maybe even be a good sign? Well, aside from the fact that, you know, it might mean that the CEO and CFO are going to off themselves or something, but other than that, do you see why a negative might, if you were really weird, you might see that as a good sign? Tax loss carry forward. If they're taken over by a very profitable company, the profitable company gets their losses to put against their own income. So that might be a signal that there could be a buyout opportunity, which would pop that stupid stock up in the air for a little while in the hostile takeover. Maybe. The nuances in this, I mean, a lot of this is, quite honestly, is speculation. You're, in a sense, you're arguing about how many angels are dancing on the head of a pin. Well, maybe there's no pin, maybe there's no angels, and maybe if there are angels, they're not doing the kind of stuff that you think they do. Okay, but anyway, Lockheed Martin is the one that we would look at. But again, notice how I keep talking about the numbers are there, but it's not the numbers, it's knowing what the numbers are telling you relative to other numbers. I deliberately brought up a couple of negative EPS companies to show you that it's not the number itself, it's the number relative to its industry or to your expectations of what it should be and all of that. Okay, now, let me take you back over here for a minute. I want to try. Okay. Is there some reason why this whole thing sucks? Okay. Let me get this off here. Okay. Here we go. Now, in your resources tab, there are a couple of things I want to show you really quickly in here. The first thing is that I'm really bad when it comes to finding what I want on the fly. Am I serious? Come on. Oh, here it is. Okay, company research resources at ISU. That'll be in your resources tab in VeggieNet. Okay, now I've shown this to you before, but I cannot emphasize this enough. You would pay literally thousands and thousands of dollars for subscriptions to each of these services. But as a student here at ISU, and to a limited extent for a while after you graduate, you have free access to these insanely valuable resources for your research, for your own purposes, if you're looking at jobs and companies. These are there for you. Now, the one that I'm going to bring up here is S&P Global Net Advantage. I said S&P Global Net Advantage. Okay. And this is a costly service. Honestly, I could never afford this if I weren't teaching here. Although I do have to say, is there some reason the internet, I was going to say, do I need a hand crank on the computer. Okay, so let me show you this. I'm going to type in, now this is public companies, but you can also get information, at least some, on many private companies too. But let me type in Lockheed Martin. Now remember what I said. I'm going to show you how to calculate ratios. Oh, wait a minute. Ratios. Oh my God. Look at all the ratios. Now I prefer left, the most recent on the left. It's just me. Oh, all of these ratios, more than I would ever teach you, sometimes more than I would ever need, because there are other places you can get ratios, other ratios here. The point I'm trying to make here is that you don't impress me if you can do the calculation. I mean, you'll see me do a couple of questions on calculations, but mostly you impress me when you show me that you understand what the numbers mean and where good range is, where bad range is. You understand all of that because these machines can do this blindingly fast. Yes, we need to know how to do the calculations. We need to know what the formulas are because that's the basis of interpretation, which I will show you here in a little while, shortly here. But I'm aiming right here to show you that not only can you get the ratios, you can get comparatives so that you can see what these ratios are compared to industry averages. You can do all of this, and you can copy and paste them into tables in your research papers, make nice graphs of them and all this kind of stuff. You can do things that are just beyond belief. Oddly, I was right. The computers were starting to show up, except that very few people knew them as anything more than something in science fiction back when we were using them back in the old days. These were not there, but I tell you, was kind of, as I'm thinking about it, this kind of service, these services that provided these kinds of calculations, showed up pretty quickly in the pre-internet era because there was such a demand from them, from wealthy brokerage houses and traders, that this kind of stuff did start showing up pretty early on, but it wasn't available really until, I don't know, maybe in the early 2000s I could have started showing it, but I got so much resistance to doing it this way back then. Now, fortunately, they can bitch at me all they want, and I'll still do it this way. But you do have to know how the formulas work. But at the same time, I'm much more interested in you showing me that you understand what you're seeing at the end of the day. Hence why I was walking around the room giving those silly numbers. And it sounded like I was maybe losing my mind. Well, yes, there's that. But I had a purpose. Those numbers mean nothing unless you know what they have to do with. The 5,280, well, that isn't that the distance in feet of a mile? And then that one that was in the billions, that was the number of molecules of water that is in one standard milliliter of water. Yeah, they actually have meaning, but unless you know that, they mean nothing. So now I can take you over here. Let me show you resources. I have here a financial ratios analysis sheet. Now this is in your resources tab. This is just a quick sheet. Now there are literally hundreds of ratios. I still have a book, little book of financial ratios. And it was just like thick with ratios. And I mean, anyone who does this kind of stuff, has this fetish for this, has his or her own favorite ratios. This is sort of a standard set, the one that you would see in the textbook. Although there's one here that's not in the textbook. This is an old school ratio, the burn ratio. It's in the liquidities. Strangely enough, I thought it was something that only I was using, and I just show it as a, hey, here's a lol. It was right before Wall Street Bets started talking about GameStop that there was this analyst, She was mostly an elf, but she started talking about GameStop's cash to current liabilities. And she pointed out that it was insanely high. So I stopped reading her article and I went and grabbed GameStop's financials, and sure enough, she was right. Bizarrely high. Something like, that shouldn't be for a company that's nearly dead, which GameStop is and was. I mean, it had lost the ability because of all the online, on-demand games. They're one of their major ways of making money was the shrink wrap ones. That was, they were losing money on that. Why would anyone care about this company? But then she showed this company had this insane cash reserve relative to the current liabilities. And I was impressed when I saw that. She noticed that because that's the burn ratio. She didn't call it the burn ratio, but she was looking at it. And then since then, I've seen two other analysts, again, not calling it the old school name burn ratio, but they've looked at the same ratio. So I keep it in here for that. Now, all of these others I'm going to go through, and I'm going to talk about them today. Up here, I'm going to show you this. This formula here, year-over-year change, is a specific example of the overall annualized change in for over N years. This formula is actually insanely common in everything from calculus to physics to chemistry to geology to virology. I mean, it's just a ridiculously common formula all through the hard and soft sciences. And we use it to standardize measures of holding period returns. In other words, you held a stock for 2 years, 3 months, and 5 days, and it went up over that period by a certain amount. You held another stock for 5 years, 6 months, and 1 day, and you got a certain return. What this formula does is turn both of them into annualized so that we can actually compare the numbers year to year. What was the annualized return on the two portfolios? That way I can tell which one of you was better. And there are so many other uses of this. But we'll be using this down the road. This one we'll be using next week and the week after that. But that's not that. Here's the financial ratios. Now, moving through this, and I say what these are, their meaning. You can plug them in. You can use Excel to do it. We'll do it with Excel. If you think for 1 minute I'm going to do them with pencil and paper, you're wrong. I'm going to use Excel to do them, which we always do these days. But that doesn't mean you've got anything. It's actually interpreting them. And then there's another part to it. Well, what's a good number for gross margin? What's a bad number? And I'd say, hell, you got me. I would have to know about the industry. And oftentimes, we look at numbers, these ratios, relative to the industry in which companies operate. There are two problems with that. There are two problems. One is that some of these companies, you have to ask yourself, what's the industry? I mean, they're so diversified. What company do I compare this company to? Or what industry is this company in when it's in like 10 different industries? That's a major problem. S&P does its best to give you a tight core of companies that are very similar and look at the ratios relative to each other. There's another problem too, though. There's a problem, well, you got this company has a return on equity of 22.8%. The industry average is 22.5%. Okay, so this is pretty close to the industry average. Good thing. Well, what happens if the industry sucks? What happens if the industry is in real trouble? Do you really want to be the industry average? Sometimes it's the company that is way away from the average that's the one that is actually going to survive. So you can't always think that the average is where everyone should be. Although you do want not to, if the class average for an exam is 75%, you can't tell me that the 32% you got is all that great. Well, I'm just a leader of a new trend. Okay. But you know what I mean. Be cautious when you say, well, the industry average is yada yada, and ours is almost the same. Well, that might not be a good thing. Also, another thing about these ratios. Some of these are kind of hard to get the number. See this one, the average collection period? It's not all that easy sometimes to get the average daily credit sales. One way you can do it is take accounts, no, you can't do that. Sometimes you have to look in the notes of the financial statement to find the average daily credit sales. And that kind of blows the whole point of using Excel rapidly to get your numbers. Okay, but let me take you through some of these. Just do a casual walk, but I'm going to stop a couple of places and give you some warnings along the way. Now, gross margin. Now, whenever you say margin, you should be talking about relative to sales. I've seen people say, well, my gross margin was $5,000. No, it wasn't. Your gross margin, that's your gross income or your gross profit. Your gross margin is the $5,000 divided by whatever your sales were. So the gross margin, remember that gross profit is your revenue minus your cost of goods sold. So in other words, your gross margin is how many pennies of every dollar that came into the cash drawer survived wholesale. Look, last year, my revenue, well, last year is humiliating. The last good year, my revenue was about $12,000. Now, my cost of goods sold, my cost of my frames, my glass, the museum glass, the printing of the artwork and all that, was $4,800. So in other words, about $7,200 survived wholesale. So if I took $7,200 divided by $12,000, I would get per dollar how much survived my wholesale cost. Now, this number can be all over the place. I mean, some companies have gross margin that is like 90 cents, 0.90. 90 cents of every dollar survived wholesale cost from the cash drawer. But then you got other companies that are like 0.30, 30 cents of every dollar. And then you have some companies that basically the gross margin is basically there are no cost of goods sold. Service companies, service industries, they don't have a cost of goods sold, so the gross margin really doesn't have any meaning there. Now, operating margin. Now, if you remember operating income, EBIT, you take your cost of goods sold, you take all of your sales, general, and administrative expenses, you know, your light bills, your salaries, and all that kind of stuff, and minus your depreciation, and then you get down there to EBIT. This operating margin is how many pennies of every dollar survived all of the operating costs. How many pennies of every dollar survived all of your operating costs, your wholesale costs, your light bills, your salaries and wages, everything. Now, net margin. This one's kind of an odd one because this is net income. In other words, how much money made it to the bottom line? In other words, how much money made it to the point where it belongs to the shareholders? All the debt holders have been taken care of in their timely manner. So net income is what belongs to the shareholders. Divide that by sales, and that's telling us how much of every dollar that came into the cash drawers survived to become the property of the owners, the shareholders. How many pennies of every dollar survived all of the bills to make it to the point where it is the property of the shareholders. Now, the company can give it to them as dividends, plow it back into the company, but it belongs to the shareholders. What's a good number for this? It is just amazing how widely that can vary from one industry to another. In service industries, that net margin can be 70%, 0.70. 70 cents of every dollar made it to the bottom line. There was therapeutics. They did back adjustments, massages, hand and foot manipulations to for injuries. People had workplace injuries. I saw theirs maybe about 15 years ago. Their net margin was a mind-boggling 82 cents on the dollar. Well, it was because they don't have hardly any cost except for salary, general, and administrative expenses and the rental on their operation, which was not in a very expensive part of town. However, you look at some other industries, you could have a company that has a one penny. That's not unusual for massive companies like oil companies. One penny of every dollar makes it from the revenue line to the point where it belongs to the shareholders. And that is just fine. Well, how could that be fine? Oh, that's because they make hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars every year. They pull in revenue. So all of those giant expenses for all that fixed capital that they have all over the world, just mind-boggling the amount of, when you see all of this industrial stuff, yeah, a penny is fine. This is an interesting thing because there's a business model. Okay, how many of you have ever shopped at a Dollar Tree? Anyone? Yeah. Full disclosure, I'm a Dollar Tree hoe. You know, 10 bucks, 10 gifts for Christmas for me. But think about it. Each one of those stores makes only a few dollars a day at the bottom line. You multiply that by 5,000-10,000 stores, you've got a constant annual stream of revenue that is unbeatable. And even if one store burns down, who cares? It's such a distributed cash flow mechanism. Aldi's is the same way. And you can think of other stores. You think, how could they ever survive with their low prices and this cheap stuff, and low prices and all that? It's because it's scalable. The candy, the original candy making companies, they were making a tenth of a penny on each one of their pieces of candy. They sold billions and billions and billions of those pieces of candy, and hence we have giants of the golden age of capitalism like Kraft and places like that. They made their money on scale. So when you see a low profit margin, that might not be a big problem at all, because it is scale of operations that is driving the model, the business model. This is why I really don't have a whole lot of use for these people who come to me, well, this is going to sell like hotcakes and we can retire in a year. You dumb sons of dogs. You don't understand how we used to win football games. We didn't throw Hail Mary passes. We did it like old Woody Hayes at Ohio State did, 3 yards and a cloud of dust, just down the field until you win every game and you wear out the opponents. Okay, now, return on equity and return on assets. I'll focus on return on assets, and then I'm going to tell you a story. Return on assets says, consider all of the assets of the company as a portfolio. You, sir, are a portfolio. Now, some of your assets are working assets. You have hands. Those work. Fingers and all that, right? Feet, muscles. But you also have non-working assets, too. You have a liver. It works only on the weekends, processing alcohol. You have I mean, you have other organs that are necessary, but you can't, they're not really operating organs. But taking all that together, you, sir, are a portfolio of assets. Okay, let's say that portfolio has a value of $100,000. That's how much we put into you. Not all of it was worth it, I'll tell you that. Oh, no. Anyway, you've been a disappointment to me. Okay, but you make $20,000 a year. So in other words, that portfolio earns a 20% return. You got the idea? That's what the return on assets does. It just says, there's the portfolio. It's all the assets of the corporation. Now, how much did it make for the shareholders at the bottom line, net income? So, in other words, the higher the better, right? Oh, God, no. This is where we come to bear with an understanding of what the formula calculates. Net income over total assets. Here's the problem. And I'll give you an actual real-life example. And I was in the industry at the time. I was doing oil and gas down in Texas. And you see, most people would not know that the oil refineries, and if any of you have ever been around oil refineries, there's one kind of going toward up there past Joliet. You see, that's a little baby thing. I mean, the ones I'm talking about are just like vast. And that's one of the things that most people hate it. Come off the plains we used to, it's not that way anymore. You come off the plains onto the tarmac in Houston, and you'd be hit with this awful smell of hydrocarbons, oil. I mean, God, it was in the air, and boy, that smelled like money. But in the oil refineries along the coastal waters down in the south and in other places, the last of the oil refineries were built in the 70s. And then they just ran and ran and ran. Now, as oil people started, people, companies, industries, the fossil fuels were burning fast and furious, and the cars and the trucks and the power plants and all of the other ways that we used hydrocarbon products from the gasoline on through to the distillates like the jet fuels and the kerosenes and all that kind of stuff. It was growing, the demand, the net income of those oil companies was going through the roof. God, it was a good day every day. And all the bitching in the world from the environmentalists, they just laughed at it because it was never going to end and the profits were just pouring in. Net income, profit. You see, they weren't fixing the oil refineries. They weren't adding to them. Why should they? They were built. And so, see that total assets? Depreciation, accounting depreciation, yes, but it was reflecting economic depreciation. Was eroding total assets. Total assets was going down year over year over year. Net income was going up year over year over year for two different, completely different reasons. But do you see what happens when the numerator goes up and the denominator goes down? What happens to the result, the return on assets? It goes up and up and up every year. My God, look at that industry. We ought to invest in that because that ROA is just going up and up and up every year until... When I was down there, what was happening, the refineries were exploding. Just boom. Whole families were wiped out in the refineries and the towns nearby. Kids were killed playing on the freaking playgrounds. It was a five-state slaughterhouse going on. And those refineries went boom, boom, boom. And our law enforcement, our legislatures were too stupid to understand that it was willful negligence, homicide. Those people didn't die by accident. They died because of the ROA. We all knew what was going on. We just didn't think, my God, that was a big explosion. I wonder how many people died that time. Yeah, families that worked in the refineries were killed. And it wasn't just the oil industry. I was into energy. I was learning the energy industry so that I could do futures contracts. I could know enough to play futures and create hedges. I went to a coal-burning power plant. Not too far from where we are now, not too far. And I was taken on a tour of it by an old engineer. He was literally elderly at the time he showed me how it was going, how it was the whole thing in the 1990s. We went down into the basement, and he had these big, heavy lights that he was running because we were going back in these places that were dark. And he said, I want to show you something. And he showed me this pipe, and it was going from some big, like a compressor, over this way. And I'll be a son of a dog if the big stamp of the maker of that pipe was a swastika, a Nazi industrial pipe. Because when that factory was built, we were still doing active, friendly trading with the Nazis in Germany. So that coal-fired burning power plant was using equipment that had been bought. It could not have been bought after the late 1930s. Well, those coal-fired burning power plants, they were blowing up. They went kaboom until they finally started replacing the pipes. In one case, there was an entire turbine that went through 6 feet of concrete and landed about half a mile away in a field. Yeah, so you see, just because you have a high ratio, that's a good thing? Not always. I could probably have you, sir. Well, my God, this boy is doing 100 hours of work a week. He is just an incredible employee. Well, eventually you just detonate, and you're gone forever. Well, wow, at least he went out with a bang. Boy, it stinks in here, okay? You understand that when we look at these ratios, there's not always a great higher every year. You have to ask yourself, why? And what's the negative side of it? We'll pick this up on Monday. Right now, I need you to open up. Your quiz should be available both for you in the classroom and you on live stream. When you're finished with the quiz, that's all I have for you. I thank you.